Sam Shalabi, a key player in Montreal's free improv scene, loves to explore everything in music, from free-form psych rock to abstract performance. Today, we will hear an interview with Sam Shalabi. Recently, Shalabi has been developing music on trips between Montreal and Cairo, continuing an exploration of diverse musical styles from the Middle East to North America, offering striking cross-continental compositions rooted in his own personal reflections, working in the Middle East at a time of war. I had the opportunity to speak with Sam Shalabi in Montreal for CKUT Radio. 1,000 years from
now. Thematically, I guess the thing that informed the album was looking at trying to sort of see how this place looked from there, both for myself and also from people that I knew there, you know, Egyptians that I knew there and Arabs that I knew there, and just sort of trying to get a sense of what a place like Cairo thought of a place like North America, you know, and then in every way, you know, sort of politically, culturally, socially, and all that. And so that really had a big influence on the album, and I don't really fit in here completely. I didn't fit in there completely either, although I fit in there as much as I fit in here, which was kind of nice, and but also gave me some sort of distance from what it was like there. So that's kind of a lot of what the album is about. The only thing thematically that I was in was this feeling that this sort of idea of things finishing. In a bizarre way, I guess, sort of, you know, part of the reason why I wanted to get out of here was it felt like certain stuff for me was finishing, you know, like either psychologically or whatever, emotionally or you know, creatively. Things kind of seemed to be at a standstill for me here. And then when I went there, I realized that I kind of had that feeling about around 2001, you know, I sort of had this feeling things were kind of coming to an end. Things were definitely finishing. And a lot of politically what was going on here was a sort of mad scramble, you know, to stop that by the powers that be. And so when I went there, I sort of went there with that feeling, you know, and really wanted to kind of like see if there was any kind of validity to it, you know, that once I was out of here, if it still looked that way to me, and also how, you know, if it looked that way to anybody else, you know, in Cairo and amongst, you know, people that I knew. So all of that kind of informed the album.
So how did North America look, or Montreal look from Cairo? How did it look from your own view, being in Egypt, being in one of the great capitals of the Arab world? How did Montreal, North America look, and how did that vision influence the pieces that you composed?
I was lucky in that the person that I knew here, my contact here, he set me up with this fellow, Abdu, who I was very lucky that he was the guy that I met, because he's an activist, Abdu, and he's a secular activist, but he's very, very Egyptian. He was a very proud Egyptian guy and a very smart guy and does a lot of good work there. And so the first people that I met were his group, actually, the people that he was working with. And it was a really good way to sort of get oriented, I guess, in Cairo. And so in terms of sort of getting a sense of, like, say, the political landscape of Egypt, they were really good guides for that. You know, I think probably the best guides for it, because they were very open people and, you know, very thoughtful people and, you know, very passionate people about what they were doing. And so, and then I ended up meeting artists that were, in a sense, that were part of that. I mean, you know, that were doing work in, you know, kind of a mirror image of kind of stuff that I was doing here, you know, but definitely Egyptian art and music. And so, I mean, in terms of sort of getting this sense that culturally and politically things here were kind of dissipating, you know, or in this kind of like state of decline, that didn't change, actually. But then when I was there, I got a different perspective on it. Part of meeting these artists was that there wasn't this sort of like dichotomy of, like, you know, East versus West, you know, or anything as sort of stupid as like Muslim versus Christian, or, you know, America versus, you know, the Middle East. because I think the kind of line that a lot of people that I knew were trying to draw was people doing work here against the status quo, or, you know, doing sort of, you know, art that wasn't mainstream art here. And they saw themselves as being affiliated with that, you know. But at the same time, there was a lot of empathy between us, because the things that they saw as being damaging, you know, both to sort of the Arab world and to people here, you know, they were very similar to things that I also saw, you know. So a lot of the perspective of people there was not so much the sense that they were within this North American sense of, you know, alienation or decline, or that things were, in a sense, were getting worse, but more that they could see it from a perspective that almost as they were kind of on the, almost sort of on the shit end of the stick, in a sense, you know, because a lot of, they saw that what was going on politically in the Arab world in Egypt was really connected to what was going on here. One guy that I know kind of described North America as sort of the eye of the hurricane, you know, that, you know, this is the only place where people generally don't have this sense of, as Walter Benjamin called it, like a state of emergency, you know, where his notion was that that's what it is all the time. If you're aware politically what, and sort of culturally what's going on in a place, that that's what you're living with. Whereas there, they kind of are, just because they're living under a dictatorship that is intimately connected to the U.S. and Israel and a lot of the sort of, you know, economic things that are connected to here. And so it was kind of the same, but different. There, in a sense, they were more hopeful than people are here, and more excited, and also more fearful, because it's sort of more in front of their face. Yet at the same time, they could see good things happening here. You know, I mean, they could see that people were doing work that was very similar to what they were doing there. And that was the thread that they connected. They didn't have a kind of a totalizing notion of, like, you know, well, you know, what's going on politically, culturally in the U.S. or Canada is garbage. They could really sort of see that, in a sense, both people that they had, were attracted to or affiliated to here, were doing the same work, and in a sense against the same series of obstacles and sort of enemies, I guess, or whatever. So
a state of emergency. Often your music sounds like a state of emergency. It could. So maybe talk about how that situation you're describing, the cultural and political layers of contemporary Egyptian society, informed the compositions on your new album.
I think musically, what was going on there had a huge influence, just because it was much more unusual and varied, you know, and unpredictable what I would see there, you know, musically. In terms of sort of a, you know, sort of relating it politically to what's going on there, Egypt, when I was there, was in a very funny place, you know, because they had their quote-unquote democratic elections, you know, and which they weren't. And Mubarak, I think, was really trying to appease, you know, like the Western eyes, you know, by saying, look, I'm having, you know, I'm not censoring the media anymore and blah, 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 blah. And it happened, and of course he won, you know, because the election, I'm sure, was probably rigged. But then when I was there, what was happening was a kind of backlash, that a lot of the people that he had asked, you know, the independent media and, you know, things like that he had asked to sort of come on board, you know, either as election monitors after the election, there was a backlash against those people. You know, a lot of them were interrogated, you know, censorship started again. And so, yet at the same time, the Brotherhood had won such a huge number in the parliament, and that kind of freaked him out and Mubarak, and freaked a lot of people out, only because despite what the media here might sort of, you know, want to portray, is secularism is still quite huge, but it's not, it's enemy sort of number one, you know, now in Egypt, because the Brotherhood, of course, who are getting more and more powerful, are not secularists, and any hint of that they're against. And then Mubarak, of course, is against it for the usual reasons of that they're the ones that are actually interested in democracy, you know, so they're seen as a threat. So it was both this sort of bizarre feeling pretty well everywhere you went in Cairo, where people thought something was going to happen. You know, there's this sense of that something had to happen in Egypt, you know, that they'd had enough, you know, of Mubarak and his sort of regime. Yet people were fearful, you know, because, it's a military state. And yet at the same time, there's the Brotherhood who were attracting huge numbers of, you know, poor people in the slums and just getting more and more powerful. And people were kind of afraid of that, too. I guess a lot of people that I knew saw it as a ruse. You know, they sort of see the Brotherhood as a kind of weird ruse that Mubarak tolerates and the U.S. and the West loves, hates, because as long as there's no real democratic movement that's into sort of, you know, nationalizing the economy and, you know, social reform and blah, 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 which the Brotherhood into doing, but only through religion. So there was all that sort of that kind of was going on there. So the idea of like their state of emergency was apparent. I mean, it was quite, you know, I mean, Benjamin's idea is that his notion is that we always think of a state of emergency as something that happens when there's a war or when there's, you know, a totalitarian state or a dictatorship or, you know, very overt repression. And Benjamin's notion was that, you know, that's not true at all, that it's there all the time. If you're living in a state, a quote unquote democratic state, that it's there all the time. It's just, it's almost something that is not explicit. But the more you kind of look at how peacetime developed Western states and countries are run and maintain themselves, that you just scratch the surface and you realize that's what's going on, you know, that the normal sort of, you know, effective state for someone would be that, you know.
You've referenced Waltman Benjamin in your music before.
Yeah, I made an album for him, actually, and sort of an album for him and inspired by him, actually.
Why is he such an...
The first thing that I really like about Benjamin is that he wasn't sort of connected to any institutional, like he wasn't connected to a university or, you know, and he was nomadic, you know, he was a very sort of nomadic thinker and very much in the street. And so his perspective is he kind of erases the high art, low art, you know, thing. And so in his writing, what ends up happening is that all of these things, he sees all of these things intimately connected. You know, he sees the political connected to the psychological, you know, and in every way, you know, right across the sort of the spectrum of what happens in a society, from the individual to the larger thing. And he's not really, he's interested in low art, you know, quote unquote low art, you know, like, you know, what would be pop culture now? He's really, you know, for that time, he's really interested in it. And he sees it as a significant tool, you know, political tool, you know, and that if you know how to read it, you can change it. You know, you can offer something else to it. All of his writing is kind of infused with that. And that's really what I think is amazing about him. And also he's almost sort of like the, you know, Nostradamus of philosophy in a way, or critical thinking, because so much of what is happening now he kind of predicted by looking backwards. He looked at the 19th century and tried to understand his time, which was like the 20s, 30s, and 40s of the last century. And I mean, when I first read Benjamin, I didn't really know a lot about him. But that's what I was struck by. I was just struck by how this guy writing at that time was way more advanced than a lot of, you know, post-structuralist or whatever, you know, modern day critical thinkers. And I think partially because he was, you know, sort of on the ground, you know, he wasn't this academic guy writing, you know, in an institution, you know, and he was essentially what would be now a bum, you know, but a very smart, super perceptive guy, you know, that was his thing, this sort of nomadic thought, you know. And yeah, I mean, there's so many things about Benjamin that I think are amazing, but that's sort of, I mean, that's kind of the main thing, you know. I mean, he's sort of incredible in politically, you know, what he says about culture is incredible, you know, anti-Semitism and Hitler and, you know, sort of totalitarianism. And that idea of the state of emergency in Benjamin
what I like about that idea is that he doesn't, in the same way that he kind of blurs the lines, or not blurs them, but sees a connection between, you know, the political, the cultural, you know, the psychological or whatever, he sees that, you know, war and peace, they're the same thing. You know, they're, you know, as Foucault said, you know, war is power by other means, you know. And for Benjamin, he looks at sort of, you know, peacetime, you know, between war states, and doesn't see it that way. He says that the only reason that there is peace is because someone won, essentially, something or some, you know, some power or something won, and they're enforcing a way for people to behave and, you know, different methods of control. He was a sort of Nostradamus for, you know, critical thinking is that he looked at, he didn't look at war, because I think when people tend to look at war and conflict, they can only make the leap to other conflicts, right? I mean, they kind of connect it to other kinds of things. What Benjamin looked at, pretty banal things, very everyday things in people's lives, and sort of tried to show how there was a political element to it. That's why I really like him.
Your musical journey has been a long journey. You've worked, played in many atmospheres, many styles, many environments. You've put out albums on a solo front, collectively with many different groups. Also, you've composed music for films, including Being Osama, which had a very beautiful soundtrack. So maybe talk about your latest release in that musical trajectory. How do you view it as either a build-up? Did things build up to this release, or have things altered and changed? I realize now, perhaps implicitly, there's a lot of social commentary in your music. So talk about that journey and where you're at today.
I mean, if I want to get specific, like say Shalabi Effect, that's a collaborative, it's a collective thing. It's not, I mean, and it's very much that, you know, and so, you know, there's four of us. And so anything that I would say about Shalabi Effect is 25% of, you know, the story really of what, you know, because it is a very collective group. I mean, for me, the stuff that I do, it's sort of almost like writing a novel or something where, you know, like when you do it, you're not going to write the same novel again, right? I mean, people do, but they hopefully try and tell a different story, you know, with different characters and, you know, different ideas and, you know, layers or whatever. And so when I finish an album, I have no interest in doing it again, either performing it or, you know, replicating it somehow, because it's sort of a process of doing it. You know, I usually end up learning stuff that I, you know, while I'm doing it. And so for better or for worse, I mean, all of my own CDs are really just about me learning how to do that particular thing. And then, you know, once I've done it, then I don't really want to do it again, because there's no point. I'm not interested in sort of developing a, you know, kind of a career in that way, you know, by finding some formula or, you know, latching on to something, because there's been albums that I've done that, you know, that people have wanted me to do again, you know, either live or, you know, like Osama, people wanted me to do that again, you know, for whatever reason they wanted, you know, to replicate it again, you know, at festivals and whatever. And I really had no interest in doing it. I mean, you know, even if I could do it, I had no interest in doing it. And when you do something and I don't quite know how to do it, or I'm learning about it, it takes you somewhere. It kind of pulls you out of your habits. And so it is confessional anyway, because you're putting, yeah, exactly. You know, and I mean, I guess the other sort of continuity is that sort of idea of Benjamin's again, that, you know, that all of this stuff is connected. I mean, you know, that I couldn't write a song, you know, about a girl, you know, or whatever, you know, a bus, you know, without thinking about its context, and because it's just there anyway. And I think that's sort of, you know, part of the problem for me, a lot of the problem with a lot of art. Either it has none of that, you know. I mean, there's this kind of notion that art shouldn't be political. And I agree half with that, in that usually for me anyway, at least in terms of music, political art is usually bad because it's really kind of boneheaded or preaching to the converted, you know, and I'm not really interested in that, actually. Or it's completely apolitical, that they just kind of, you know, like this movie, you know, that I was describing, they just completely ignore it almost as if that world does not exist. It doesn't impinge on our lives that, you know, true art is about this sort of thing of expressing your emotions, period. And so I guess what I am interested in is how there's that area in between where things get messed up and you can't differentiate, because sort of that notion that people give a lot of lip service to. I mean, people sort of say, well, you know, the personal is the political, you know, and vice versa, which I think is true. But in terms of art, sort of doing whatever cultural work, they just give lip service to that idea. They don't actually investigate that more, you know. And I mean, I'm not the only one that does that, but I mean, that's what I'm interested in.
You're talking about control, social control, even personalized mental control. Your music is pretty out of control at times, but at the same time, it's composed. But to a listener, it can sound quite out of control. But your solo albums are meticulously composed. So there's kind of an interesting relationship there between at least the traditional definitions of what a music piece is and how it should sound, or how music should be composed, and
right.
And your version, which is obviously quite innovative, quite different, but not perhaps within those traditional definitions or controlled definitions of what musicality is. So, and then also in terms of bridging different styles, your newest album, from the pieces I've heard, bring together quite interesting and different elements. You have singing in Arabic, you have electric guitar, many different elements, and it's wrapped together in a quite unique way. So maybe talk about that.
It's sort of about the idea of composition. The one thing that I like about sort of improvisation, say, there's a composer, Morton Feldman, actually, who's a huge, huge influence on me, although my music doesn't really sound like Feldman. But the thing that I love about Feldman, that Feldman started to do in the 50s, was he was really interested in this idea of, you know, sort of random music, you know, like just aleatory music, you know, music that is totally random. For me, the thing in terms of composing that I sort of, you know, dip into, I guess, is that a lot of the ideas that people use in improvisation, I try to kind of apply them to composition. I mean, I do, it's composed what I do, but the certain things that one would do when they're sort of, you know, as they say, composing on the spot, you know, which improvisation is, those decisions, those sort of quick intuitive decisions that you make, I try to use that in the way that I compose. But the material that I use is more non-musical, you know. I mean, the way that I often work with my own stuff is I need, it has to be about something. Those, the song or the piece or the album or whatever has to be about something. I can't really just kind of make a piece of music and then listen to it and go, you know, this is about the Eiffel Tower or whatever. You know, I can't really do that. You know,
is that something for you?
It's non-Western, Western perspective and, you know, sort of trying to draw a line between that, that isn't kind of overcoated with all sorts of, you know, religious or dogmatic political crap. Trying to really see if there's a, you know, an affinity or, you know, a real kind of, you know, way to do something that fuses my life here or who I am here and, you know, my background, you know, sort of as a Egyptian. And it was sort of also the other idea that I talked about, this idea of, I mean, there's a song in the album called Honey Limbo, actually. And a lot of the album is kind of about limbo. It sort of feels like we're, you know, kind of culturally, to me anyway, that we're sort of stuck, you know, that things are kind of stuck. And part of that, you know, maybe is a little bit Marxist, but I think it's kind of true, is that all of these things, you know, the infrastructure of a society and the structure of it are intimately connected, so that when things economically, politically are getting desperate or in decline, there's a reaction to it culturally. It's manifested culturally. It's manifested psychologically and, you know, personally or whatever. Say something like, you know, 80s revivalism, you know, makes sense because, you know, economically and politically, we've kind of gone back in a different, more ugly version to what the 80s were like with Reagan and Thatcher and, you know, like all of the ugliness that was going on there. You know, like, for instance, like, I mean, when Reagan died, you know, people were talking about how he was a great statesman, you know, and sort of trying to do this revisionist history on that whole era. And I think for me, that's manifested culturally as well, that you now, you know, you have music now. To me, it sounds like I'm old enough to go, oh, that just sounds like, you know, 80s music. I mean, it just sounds like, you know, like in every way, in sort of its emotional tropes and, you know, in its sound and, you know, and its function too. So that's kind of what the album is sort of about, that, but not, it's not like a bleak album in the respect that, you know, at the same time, it sort of tries to draw musically, you know, and lyrically like a sort of a thread between how there is this connection, you know, and how there is this way to get perspective, you know, on, say, the Arab world and, you know, the world here.
You've been listening to an interview with Sam Shalabi, Montreal musician and composer, produced for CKUT Radio in Montreal by Stéphane Christophe. Musician and composer Sam Shalabi will be performing in Montreal on Wednesday, November 11th at La Sala Rosa, 4848 Saint Laurent, 8 o'clock. For more information, visit www.tadamon.ca. That's www.tadamon.ca.